Well, South Africans are bracing themselves for daily load shedding from next week with no clear picture as to when it might come to an end. The man doing arguably the country's most difficult job joins us now. Eskom Chief Executive, Mr. Tshediso Matona. Thank you for your time this evening.
Good evening.
Mr. Matona, how predictable can and does Eskom plan to make load shedding for South Africans?
Well, there are two types of load shedding. It's the one that you actually plan where you decide to take capacity out of the system, out of the grid, because you want to do maintenance. You want to fix the plant. And there is unpredictable load shedding, which is based on the plant. Because it has not been maintained, it is unreliable and break down very frequently. The situation we have is that we're sitting more with the problem of unpredictable load shedding because we don't have the reserve. Typically, if you have the reserve margin, in fact, that's not load shedding. It's called planned maintenance. You're planning, it's like taking your car to service, you know, at a garage, you know, you manage in that, you know, when you can afford not to have a car, and so on. That's the kind of practice of maintenance that Eskom should have been doing, and Eskom has not been doing. Consequences of that is that the plant is unreliable, and because we've lost so much capacity as a result of various incidents, you know, the silo collapsed, and prior to that, there was a boiler or a part of the plant that exploded, which took out quite a lot of capacity, which really put us, if you think about a car, when you've gone completely out of reserve, and your car can pick up anytime. I think this is, you know, using that metaphor, which I've been using quite a lot because it helps explain this. This is where you are. You don't know when, you know, that the car will pack up.
And
to do it is we need capacity, and so we're saying that you know the reliance on diesel helped us to achieve that, but we need more than that, and if we don't have more than that, either we continue to defer maintenance, and in which case you continue the problem, or you will have to allow the maintenance to proceed and then deal with a probability of load shedding happening anytime.
Absolutely, and we are going to get to the maintenance issues in a minute. In terms of unplanned load shedding, or what we are sort of bracing ourselves for next week, is that planned load shedding, and can we expect unplanned load shedding on top of that?
No. What we're thinking will happen next week is because we have no reserve, we are really on urge, and we know our plant is unreliable.
Yeah.
And we know that we are going to run out of diesel. Then we don't have levers. Should anything happen, as I explained, should two or three of our generators trip, break down, we have no margin of reserve. We're gonna load shed. So it's hard to tell you when it's going to happen, when it's going to happen on Tuesday, Wednesday, or wherever. Just that without reserve margin and knowing that our plant is unreliable, there could be any trigger any time that will get us into load shedding. And we indicated that is a scenario at least for the next 3 months. However, during that period, instead of deferring the maintenance to prevent that, to prevent load shedding, we will do the maintenance so that beyond at least the next 3 months, we can begin to harvest the rewards of plant that comes back, but it's more reliable because it has been maintained. And that has to be the pattern for the future going forward, because the constraint system is going to be with us for a long time, And unless we have additions of capacity, generating capacity in that time, we're going to be with this problem for a while. We do be the power plant that we're building in Limpopo. The first unit is complete. It will give us some capacity, 800 megawatts, at least over the next 6 months once it starts pumping power into the grid. However, it will not get us out of the woods, as it were. So the problem of a constrained system will stay with us. Where we have levers that we can use immediately, it's on the demand side, and that means, you know, reducing demand by way of people cutting consumption, so that we don't have demand pressure on the system because the supply cannot meet demand. And so our awareness campaign of using electricity sparingly, switching off where spaces which you're not using, pool pumps, air conditioners, and of course, you know, asking of our large users, electricity users, the industrial companies to also contribute, continue to contribute, because they assist us as well when we are constrained. Remember, we do a number of things before we reach the stage of having to load shed.
Yes.
We don't just, you know, run to switch off the switch of as it were to load shed. We explore all kinds of levers, asking people to cut down, asking our customers to also cut down. But if we fail to balance the system, then we have to protect the grid from a complete blackout. And I must emphasize this, because people misunderstand this, that load shedding we implement painfully as it is, but out of responsibility to protect the grid from total blackout.
If there were to be a total blackout of a national scale, how would we recover from that? What would Eskom do then, and what is the likelihood of that happening?
We clearly do not want to get there. That's a scenario that's too ghastly for us to contemplate. When it has happened in places like California, you know, in the United States, they were assisted by neighboring countries. You know, Canada, for example, you know, assisted them to get their grid up and running again. So you need to have neighbors that have the capacity.
Do we have neighbors that have capacity to help us?
Well, this is the point. We don't.
Yeah.
We don't have neighbors with that kind of capacity, and therefore, it means that we don't want to get to that stage, and that's why, painful as it is, we have to load shed. And by the way, when there are different stages of load shedding, at any given stage, we still supply up to the maximum of 90% of the country, because it's rotational. It's all of us sharing the pain, as it were, each one at their own time. But at any given point in time, the majority of the country still have electricity. I think the tendency is that because in my neighborhood the lights are off, I imagine the whole country is dark.
Sure.
At any given point in time, even with stage 3, where we're taking at least between 3 and 4,000 megawatts out of the system, at least 86%, Eskom still supplies electricity to 86% of the country.
And I think that's a good point to make. And you did say, despite that we are going to be living on the edge for at least 3 months, and even when Medupi comes online, we're not yet out of the woods. How long is maintenance going to take, and how much is it going to cost Eskom?
Well, Eskom runs 86 generating units. It means that we must constantly. So we should never stop maintaining.
How long until
plants.
We sort of
on an ongoing basis?
Yes.
There are different type of maintenance. There's major overhauls. There is fixing a broken part. But all of that means that you do have to take the unit out of the grid to fix that problem. We our aim to start to claw back from almost a scenario where we might be load shedding daily. We want to look at the next 3 months. So our plan is we will try and do quite aggressively, because some of the risks we know where they are. So we will try to fix these over the next 3 months whilst this problem of potential load shedding is with us, so that we can then, and hopefully in the meantime, we find other levers. There is a program now by the government, led by the Department of Energy, to look for generation capacity in the market through independent power producers, possibilities of acquiring gas. So there are a number of other projects that, if they were able to come on stream, they could shorten the period. But my view is that in the next 3 months, we are going to do much more intense maintenance, and hopefully we will lessen the extent of the load shedding. You know that we, to close the gap, this 5,000 gap that we need to get out of trouble, will take us at least the next three to 5 years, allowing for the projects that we're building to come on stream. As I said, Medupi's first unit is coming within weeks, but there's five more units that will follow over a period of time. Kusile, the other capacity project we're building, will also come on stream. But the point is that while there's a gap between supply and demand, and that's a scenario at least for the next 3 to 5 years, this reality of potential load shedding will live with us, and so we need to adjust to that reality. We will always do everything possible to reduce, minimize that likelihood, but it would be irresponsible of me to understate that potential reality.
Let's talk about that new reality. Has Eskom established whether infrastructure in South Africa can handle load shedding to this degree, and what impact it's going to have on GDP growth?
I don't know what you mean by infrastructure, but because we learned a bitter lesson, Eskom learned a bitter lesson through load shedding in 2008, we are much more prepared in terms of
switching on and off machines and large,
exactly,
yes,
and the schedule of rotation,
yes,
and the communication of that reality with stakeholders, the interface with municipalities, because we load shed them as our customers, and then they on load shed to their own customers. So I think organizationally and institutionally we are much better prepared. And you've seen, for example, the incidence of load shedding, that there has not been a massive disruption of life, as it were. It is a terrible inconvenience to the personal lives of citizens, to businesses, whatever. But we are in a position to cope better with it as a company.
And the impact on GDP growth?
The impact on GDP is work that's been done right now to estimate what the impact. The benchmark was the 2008 load shedding episode, which the number, if you may recall, was it cost the economy at that time 57 billion rand in terms of impact. So I know that other government departments that are working with us are studying this and estimating what the impact would be. Again, it depends on who is being load shed. The less of business and industry that you load shed, so you protect the economy, the less economic impact you would have. But within business, you may want to protect those sectors that are big contributors to the economy, more than those that are that contribute less to the economy, as it were. And so there are those differentiations that one has to take into account in computing what the impact would be on the economy.
Yeah, it's not a straightforward answer. You mentioned alternative forms of energy, renewable energy, independent power producers. How far advanced is this? Are these projects?
The project we're doing, the wind project in the Cape, by the way, is complete and is currently being commissioned. It's starting to feed power into the system. It's a 100 megawatt plant. I believe it's slowly ramping up to that maximum output. So we're very pleased with that. You know about the independent power producers, the renewables program, which is currently feeding over 1,000 megawatts. So there, so those initiatives are very, very helpful. However, our problem is with the renewables, at least, is that we have our most acute pressure in the peak around about this time. And that's when the sun is not there, the solar, that solar capacity doesn't really help us. It does make a difference through the day because we can rely on it to take more plant for maintenance. But when the peak hits us, where demand it sharpens and supply doesn't, there's a gap between demand and supply. In the evenings, the sun is not there. Oh, yeah. the wind is not blowing. So we welcome these projects. We think that in future going forward they should expand so that we diversify our the mix of our energy. And that's what I think government and ourselves will be working on to expand the renewables and the independent producers.
I can't let you go without asking whether privatization is an option for Eskom. Why not just sell it?
Eskom is a company owned by the state, and the state, as the owners of Eskom, have indicated that they have no intention of privatizing the company. And so, for us, it's not an option on the on the table, because it is not our prerogative. It is the prerogative of the state as the owner of the company. So I would, you know, refer you to the owners of the company to ask that question of them.
The government of South Africa. Can we expect Eskom to turn around in the foreseeable future?
Well, we are working on a turnaround ourselves. You know, we are cutting costs. We did not get the price when we applied for a tariff in this period. We did not get the price. So we are adjusting to a lower price, lower cash flows as a company. So there are things that we are doing to live within our means, as it were. However, the demands on the company in terms of expansion of capacity, doing the maintenance, are putting our financial position in distress, and it's something again that we're engaging with the government on.
Let's talk about that. What is Eskom's financing plan? You mentioned living within our means. Another question could be, have salaries reduced as part of cost-cutting measures, and how else is Eskom planning to finance maintenance?
The initiatives we are undertaking are a variety of things. For example, there is an understanding that we are financially constrained, so we have to forgo bonuses, and the top executives of the company did not get bonuses in the previous financial year. I think that for as long as our financial difficulties persist, that will be the practice, you know, to forgo bonuses. We want to reduce our headcount, and so we have a program of voluntary severance packages where we have targeted particular amount of savings And we are looking at renegotiating our supplier contracts. So our target is over the next 3 years to achieve 60 billion rand of saving, which is an aggressive aggressive number. So that's what we having to do. It was part of the understanding we have with government that the support package, which was concluded last year, and you know the Minister of Finance announced that package, which will include an equity injection, we must take some pain as well as a company, and that's exactly what we're doing.
So continued double-digit increases in tariffs not likely to be a part of that plan?
Well, there is also an acceptance that we have to migrate gradually to a cost-reflective tariff, because we currently produce electricity at a cost that we don't recover in the price that we sell. And so systematically, we are becoming bankrupt over time, unless you can get the right tariff. I think in terms of policy, the government has accepted that. The question is, how do you migrate to that? Surely it can't be a once-off sharp increase, in the tariff. That's very clear. We'll migrate. We're already sitting at 8%. We're not too far from double digits if we are going to migrate to a cost reflectivity. And indeed, because the regulator has allowed us certain costs that were not in the tariff in previous years, you will see the tariff does increase in the current or the next financial year, 2015-2016, from the current 8% to just under 13%. It reverts back to 8%. But my sense is that we will go back to the tariff and see what scope is there to have marginal increases, so that our financial pressures, we can have some relief on our financial pressures. That work will be done between ourselves and government and the regulator, so that we are able to fund activities, the legitimate activities, as part of our mandate to provide electricity, security of electricity supply to the country.
Well, there you have it. That is the state of the system with Eskom Chief Executive Tediso Matona.